Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Sauce at the Scary. It's Jeff and Derek back with you. Jeff, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. Just keeping it real on the 24/7. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. On the low, low, and the down low.
Mm-hmm.
With
like
your hang
the kids
low.
Say.
Wait. Well, cool, man. We got a great show for you guys this week. We're going to be talking about a pretty cool movie. Maybe a lost gem, if I'm being honest with you. But before we get to that, man, let's go to everyone's we actually don't have anyone's favorite part of the show this week because COVID still sucks. So with that being said, now that we're on a down note, let's go to everyone's favorite horror reporter.
This week's horror report.
All right, man. Well, I do have some interesting stuff. And, some of it's going to touch on things you don't particularly delight in, but you know what? It's interesting. So here's where we're going to start. Let me give you two words. Zack Snyder.
Yes.
Let me give you three more. Jared Leto's Joker. And here's what we found out from beyond the trailer that Snyder was speaking to in an interview. He said that he's going to update the look for the Joker. Because the look of the Joker is the main problem here.
So can we also talk about this since we're on the Snyder cut? Do you know that Zack Snyder has said that there's only going to be about 5 additional minutes of new footage in the Snyder cut?
No, I did not.
No, I think that he means like 5 minutes of like new additional footage that they're going to film.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's still like you're dumping 70, like, well, I don't know. I don't know the number, but I feel like that I've read somewhere around like $70 million into this thing. And you're going to, that's all we're getting out of it.
It's going to be 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And why is it taking so stinking long to get this thing out there?
Man, I don't know. And that's the thing that I don't understand anything about this project.
Well, what you do know is that Zack Snyder is a stuffed shirt. And so, you know, all this hype and all these little cookie crumbs and all that is just working up to us sitting on a throne of vindication saying, all right, guys, we done here?
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm happy to see like new footage of Batfleck. Like I want to spend more time with that character.
Yeah.
But doggone, man, give him his own TV show. You know, there's rumor and innuendo that they're going to put together a Batman TV series for HBO Max with Ben Affleck. And I'm like, yeah, just give me that
for sure.
I don't need a mini series of Zack Snyder's god awfulness.
Yeah, self-indulgent god delusion. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say this, though, man. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but they do have a new trailer out for it. It did nothing for me at all.
Stunning development.
But they have upgraded, or Snyder has upgraded the Steppenwolf look. And he does look like, he looks like a bad A character out of Lord of the Rings instead of the old man in the suit that he looked like in Joss Whedon's.
Oh, okay. Steppenwolf was not my major criticism.
Sure.
Of Zack Snyder's work. That just seems like, you know, the old saying.
I'm trying to find silver lining right here.
For sure. It's just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean,
I'm trying to be the superhero uncle.
The Snyder uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just Snyder, man. He thinks aesthetics, right? Like, oh, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to add a gray filter to the lens, and it's all going to look gray and realistic. Like, he just doesn't have anything of substance to offer. What he does is pretentious.
Yes.
You know, he thinks, oh, everything's got to be a Christ image. Yeah, man, that's an interesting storytelling trope the first 12 times we see it in one of your movies.
Right.
600 times, we're pretty exhausted by it. So anyway, talking about polishing the image and not really dealing with the actual problem, here's what Snyder had to say to Grace Randolph. I wanted to, of course, honor what had been created with him, speaking of Leto's Joker, because, of course, we need to honor what was created with Leto's Joker.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Because I thought it was really cool. But I also felt like, well, I'm not going to tell you what happens in the little scene, but there's some water. Some water has gone under the proverbial bridge between the last time we saw the Joker and this appearance. He's a road-weary Joker. I guess that's the way of saying it. I'll say Leto was really gracious with his entertaining my idea. I told him it was a thing that I had felt like, even when I was working on Justice League in London, I felt it was an inevitable course that the movie had to take. So when I told him it was a thing that I'd been kicking around in my head for quite a while, I feel like he just kind of warmed up to this idea. that it was kind of an inevitable thing that kind of has to happen to him. I'm grateful and I'm forever in debt to his kindness for doing it. So other than saying kind of 15 times, all I get from that is we shot 30 seconds here with Leto's Joker and we're going to act like it was some profound artistic expression that we collaborated on.
Yeah.
And man, the guy is just, he's just a stuffed shirt. Let's stop the facade. Let's get this Band-Aid pulled off and put it in front of the eyes of the world so we can move on.
I feel like that I've said this before, but I really truly do feel like that he's the antithesis of Jordan Peele. Like he thinks he's a genius and he is his own biggest fan.
Well, and he like this is the power of faking it till you make it, because he has a bunch of people who agree with that. And they're like, they're pinning messianic hopes on this thing. And I'm like, guys, we've seen Zack Snyder make full movies before with a lot of superhero characters. They sucked. Nobody wanted to watch them.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, I do want to plug again the HBO series Watchmen, since we're on this Zack Snyder thing. Man, it's one of the best TV series I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, I finished it. Maybe we should do a sidebar on that someday, because my review would not be quite so high.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's visually very impressive, but I found some thematic elements I thought were a little simplistic.
Sure.
there's Debbie Downer. I'm usually the uncle. Here I am being the cold, rainy shower.
Well, it's nice to be be on the other side of this thing.
Sure. You take the optimism reins for a while.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, spoiler alert, on this other episode of Patreon that we're doing this month, I'm going to rip this thing to shreds.
So there will be some salt.
Yeah. I'm going to try to be as positive in this episode as I possibly can.
Good for you, man. I appreciate that push. And you're right. The Patreon episode will not have a lot of love from either one of us, which probably tells you all you need to know about the movie we're going to review.
Yeah.
Hey, so I'm going to move from like bad news toward good news.
All right.
And so in this second one, I think this is good news. I think you might think it's not good news. And so I'm going to throw it out there. We've gotten some more information on the Dexter revival.
Okay.
So sort of nuts and bolts.
It's off.
No, your hopes cannot be realized to that degree. They're bringing back Marco Siega, who did a whole bunch of episodes in the previous show. He's going to be doing 6 of the 10 on this revival. So
okay,
just duly noted. Okay. Here's the plot details. It is set 10 years after Dexter Morgan went missing in the eye of Hurricane Laura. The revival sees the character now living under an assumed name in a world away from Miami. And it appears they are trying to undo how awful the finale of the series was, in the sense that
okay,
they realize it was a problem and they want to do something to correct it. The showrunner, Clyde Phillips, said, "So far as the ending of the show, this will have no resemblance to how the original finale was. This revival is a great opportunity to write a second finale." So does that give you a glimmer of hope?
It does.
They at least realize there was a problem and want to do over, right?
Mm-hmm. It does. But honestly, man, I mean, and I get it, but I was just kind of hoping that we were going to retcon that entire ending. For me, like, this thing isn't going to be the same without Jennifer Carpenter as Deb. And it's not going to be the same without, you know, that Miami police force. So while, yeah, there is a glimmer of hope, and again, it's Michael C. Hall and the original showrunner that did the first 4 seasons. I just, honest to goodness, Jeff, I may just skip this.
Well, you won't get to skip it entirely, because your friend Jeff is going to be like, "Hey, dude, this happened on Dexter."
And that's fine. And I'll be like, "Oh, cool, man. Sounds good." But I just, it's really not something I want to go back to. It sucks, man, because every once in a while I'll go back to Dexter and I'll watch the first 4 seasons, and you know, we'll maybe watch an episode or two a night before bed or whatever. And it's such a good show. And then it just falls off so hard. And I don't think I've ever felt as betrayed by a show with that and How I Met Your Mother. Those two were the ones that really, really hurt my feelings. So,
can I direct your attention to this little show some of us were into called Lost?
I know, but Lost didn't bother me as much as it did you. And I knew you were going to say that, but it didn't bother me as much as it did you. So yeah, man, at this point it feels like it feels like trying to get back with an ex, and it's just not something I want to do. So I'm excited to hear all about it from when you tell me what's going on, but it'll have to be something real big for me to be like, all right, I'm in, let's do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, Deb's death is the dog poop in the cookie dough. You just can't undo that. And so I hear you. I'm just going to lean into Dexter. I love the character. I've loved the books, love the show. I'm going to be there for this, but no Angel, certainly no Deb. That metaphor you just gave us of like trying to get back with an ex, it feels like if your ex at a, you know, in a fit of anger killed your beloved family dog, and then 10 years later is like, you know what, things got out of hand, let's get back together. You just can't undo that. You know what I mean? Like, you're the psycho who killed the dog. And I realize these are fictional characters, but I just don't think I'll ever be able to get the image of Deb pushing Jennifer Carpenter's body out the hospital on a gurney. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
You mean Dexter pushing Deb out?
Yeah, what did I say?
You said Deb pushing Jennifer Carpenter.
Gotcha. Yeah, Dexter pushing Deb's body out. That's maybe the most indelible image other than, spoiler alert, the female character who he comes home to find in a pool of blood in the whole series. And so it really may be Pandora's box and you can't tuck it all back in. I'm willing to grant that. But as a fan, I'm going to be there to see if they can.
Yeah. Well, man, and more power to you. I commend you for trying again. It's just, it really, there'd have to be a lot of stuff to change for me to get excited about it.
The thing I would tell you and anyone listening who's into the character, I've mentioned this before, but if you like Dexter and you're kind of where Derek is, I would recommend getting the audiobooks for the novels, because it's a pretty close version of everybody you've come to know and love. And it just plays out really well. You don't have that morbid, I mean, that's ironic, I guess, that I would call a movie about a show about a serial killer morbid, but you don't have that nihilistic ending on there. Mm-hmm. Kind of just get gleeful Dexter running around in hijinks and, you know, mayhem. So maybe that's the solution. You want more Dexter? You don't think you can come back from dead Deb? Grab those audiobooks. Talk to us about it in the Facebook group.
There you go.
All right. Well, I failed to improve things. I think this is objectively good news.
Okay.
We got the title treatment for Scream 5 from Kevin Williamson. We know that Scream is the official title.
Yeah.
And we know that it is going to release on January 14th, 2022. So like not much more than a year from right now. They say it's going to release to theaters. All that's good news, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we can end on a high note. We all have to sort of pretend like we know for sure that theaters will be around in 2022, but
yeah.
We'll just live in that. We'll live in that optimism.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about it. There's been a couple photos run around from the set, not necessarily about the movie or anything, but just Nev Campbell and Courtney Cox together, and that, you know, they look great. And I'm just excited to come back to this world. I think, you know, you and I have talked about how one of them needs to die probably in this one, or all three of them, you know, Cox, Arquette, and Nev Campbell need to die to allow a new generation of people to be a part of this thing. But man, I think if I'm being real honest with you, looking back on my childhood and everything, I think that Scream was the first real horror movie that I fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just always nice to go back to these characters every, I mean, it feels like every 10 years now, but if
it's like a family reunion.
Yeah. You know, if they want to keep that trend going every 5 to 10 years, I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I don't know that I want to see like Nev Campbell running away from Ghostface on a walker at some point. It's kind of got to come to an end, but there's still life left in the old franchise.
Well, hey man. Yeah. If Jamie Lee Curtis can keep doing this for 40 years, then, you know, Nev Campbell's still got a couple left in her.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I'll just take that as good news. And honestly, if theaters aren't around, we're going to have good options. I'm assuming you saw that Wonder Woman is going to go to HBO Max.
Yeah, for a month.
For a month. Okay. Look, I'm cool with that. Give me that. And I may actually pay big money to buy that, because I like that character. I like those films. That's the kind of thing that, like, if they put a premium on it, I may even pay that. And if we can figure out a middle road between You know, these films that would have been theatrical releases costing $40 to watch in my living room. If we can get that down probably under $20, I'm very willing to live in that world. So we'll get Scream in one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, this isn't, and no offense to the movie I'm about to say, but this isn't Mulan, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to pay for the streaming service and then pay an additional $30 to watch Mulan, but I will pay, you know, if HBO Max wants me to pay a premium price to watch Wonder Woman, I'll pay it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the same thing for Disney with Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once they announced that they were going to put Wonder Woman on HBO Max, you know, we have a sister podcast, Ramblings from Nowhere, and they have a Facebook group as well. And I just immediately said, bring me Black Widow. So,
yep,
that's what I want.
I mean, I would have HBO Max right now, except that we're a Roku family and they hadn't been able to figure out how to get it on Roku, you know, in a way that works for everybody. But I'm very willing to pay money to stream content in my living room.
Yeah.
Netflix is still on the shelf. I've resisted returning to it. So like somebody, HBO Max, should be coming to get my money.
Right.
Get it on Roku and I'm there and I may even pay you extra for premium content.
Yeah, which I feel like that HBO Max is getting close to striking a deal with Roku. They just did with the Amazon Fire Stick.
Yeah. Yeah. That got me excited.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic that the Roku will be the last piece of their puzzle. And I hope that is before Christmas so that we can all watch this on our TVs and not have to finagle it.
Yep. Yep, I'm with you. I really feel like, and maybe you couldn't have one without the other, but coronavirus has told movie studios, you really have to come up with a strategy that isn't only based on the bottleneck of movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy can have a place for movie theaters. It just can't bottleneck there. And it's put movie theaters in a position where they don't really have bargaining power.
Yeah.
They can't say, well, we're not going to distribute your films or whatever. But if we could somehow ramp up production of content again, this is kind of trending towards exactly what we need it to be. We're trending toward, oh yeah, you can get these things in multiple different venues that offer different strengths and different weaknesses. If you want to go have the movie theater experience, go do that. If you just want to sit at home and watch it, pay a little extra and do that. I mean, this is the direction we needed to be heading. It's just a shame that it has to happen in a way that also cuts off the pipeline of new movies. Well, hey, one last little bit of positive news. I think, again, you'll agree that this is objectively positive, and we won't spend a ton of time on it, but I may pronounce his name wrong. You'll know better and can correct me. Peter Stormare,
mm-hmm.
He has announced that Constantine 2 is absolutely in the works.
Okay.
And I'm super excited about that. We are in the Keanu Reeves renaissance. I don't think we had much of a hand in that one, but it's continuing. And if it brings me more Constantine, I'm quite happy with that.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So get ready for more chain smoking Keanu Reeves as John Constantine. And apparently there's going to be an HBO Max series with their version of Constantine as well. So as a comic book fan who likes that character, bring it on.
Yeah, well, good, man.
Maybe we review Constantine one of these days on here. How about them apples?
Whew, man, let's watch some good movies before we do that.
Oh, dude. I don't think I can. No, you're killing me. You're killing me. Constantine was a good movie.
Well, I mean, that's beauty's in the eye of the beholder. My good friend Jeff got me hyped up on watching Constantine. I watched it with our good buddy Justin Odell, and we both spent the majority of the time just cussing the whole movie. So,
oh, you'll come back to it, and you'll realize, you know, more.
And you know what? That could be true. I haven't seen it since then, so I honestly wouldn't care to rewatch it and see if my first opinion holds up or not.
I think the thing I should do is have you watch some found footage movie before and then watch Constantine. And I'll just listen to you wax poetic about its virtues.
So we watch Crow's Nest and then we watch Constantine. And guys, I know I've said The Shawshank Redemption is probably my favorite movie. Incorrect.
And that's what we call in the industry a teaser.
Yeah, exactly.
How funny. All right, I'm going to put a bow on this.
All right.
This has been this week's
Are you ready to do the thing?
Let's do it, man. Let's talk about Dark Skies.
All right.
What? No.
Spoiler alert. Did you watch this in the theater?
No, man. So I'll be honest with you, dude. I have never heard of this movie until you recommended it the other day. We were looking at trying to figure out something to do for the week. And, you know, we're also trying to do two bonus episodes this month for Patreon. My schedule is just about to go insane. And so we're trying to get as much content recorded for you guys. And so I just said, man, what do you want to do? And you said Dark Skies. It's on Netflix. And I thought you said Kurt Russell's in it. And so I was like, oh, cool. Sci-fi movie, Kurt Russell. That sounds like a plan. And then we get into it, and like the first person you see is Kerry Russell. And I was like, oh, well, that's slightly that's slightly disappointing. So long to go all the way around the track to answer this question. I did not see it in theaters.
Well, as the guy who said earlier that Deb pushed Jennifer Carpenter out of the hospital, I may have said Kurt Russell.
No, you didn't. I went back and saw reread the text message, and it said Kerry. I guess I just saw the Kurt or the K and the Russell, and it just, my heart immediately said Kirk Russell.
Well, I will tell you this. I mean, not to besmirch the good name of Kurt Russell, who I'm also a fan of, but I am an unabashed Kerry Russell fan. I think she is super talented, obviously a beautiful woman and incredibly charming. I just don't get why she hasn't had a bigger career on the silver screen. Like, I know she's done very well on television, and maybe that was just her thing. Like, I'd rather work on, was she in Bones?
No, she did Felicity.
Felicity, that's right. And then she did The Americans. And look, right, both of those are things that any actress would love to have on their CV. But I still think that she could be like a bankable leading lady. And I just don't know why she never got that superstar turn.
Yeah. Well, she was in Star Wars.
Yeah, she was in Star Wars. I mean, they stick her behind a mask.
Yeah.
I think Kerry could make Hollywood, you know, studios some money. And for some reason, they hadn't really leaned into that. I would really imagine that she is going to have a long tail to her career. And I know that actresses at a certain age find it hard to keep getting roles, but I bet Kerry will. I'm just assuming she's going to be one of those who, by the end of their career, you're like, you know what? She stayed working and it was always quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did. I mean, this probably doesn't mean anything to you, but she was in the movie Waitress back in 2007 that spawned the wonderful Broadway musical Waitress.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. That I actually got to see when I was in New York. Jordan Sparks played her character, and it was dang good.
Yeah. Well, as usual, I hate all of you people who get to see Broadway stuff. Maybe, yeah, I should say got to see Broadway stuff.
Yeah, speaking of a industry that's not coming back for a while.
What a shame, man.
Breaks my heart, man. As a matter of fact, also, going back to that 2007 Kerry Russell movie, that is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Andy Griffith's second to last cinematic role.
Aw.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll track down Waitress then.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie. I think the musical is a lot better, but it's definitely not a bad movie. Kerry Russell, Nathan Fillion is in it. So if you like, I mean, I know you like Kerry Russell, but if you like Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, he's quite fine as an actor. So I'm in on that. Well, so I asked if you saw this in the theater because I did. I was living, I think, in East Tennessee at the time. I think my wife and I were the only two people who were in the theater. And this basically is a movie got me interested in horror based on aliens.
Okay.
I have never been scared of the thought of extraterrestrial life. I've never even been particularly interested in the phenomenon other than the angle that the government was covering it up. And so it's been an interesting year on that front, because you had like the New York Times releasing Marco Rubio seeming to indicate that the U.S. government has alien technology in their possession. And, you know, the government was releasing all these cockpit recording videos of like Air Force people who were tracking UFOs in the sky. And they're saying, we have no idea what that is. And we don't even know that the technology exists for that to be Chinese or Russian or whatever. And so,
yeah,
that has been kind of open wide. But this was the first movie that got me interested in being scared of aliens. And it's going to have I've just got a soft spot in my heart for it because of nostalgia and it kind of opening that doorway for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that Randy Quaid interview this year about aliens was really crazy.
I don't know that I remember that, but I'm assuming at the point you say Randy Quaid, you know, we're in the Tyson zone. Anything could be coming.
I'm just being facetious, man. Randy Quaid played that dude in Independence Day that thought he got probed by aliens and turned him crazy. I was making a joke.
Well, you're a funny guy, and I don't always know what's funny, okay? How about that?
That was a swing and a miss. So anyway, back to Dark Skies. Not to try to push back on your storytelling there, but you guys were living in East Tennessee in 2013?
I maybe wasn't. I don't know. I just have it in my head that I was not in the Cookeville Theater when I watched it. So yeah. Maybe I may have been like out of town doing a wedding or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did this thing go to... I feel like that this thing wasn't released widescreen.
Oh, maybe that's the case. Maybe I drove somewhere to watch it. That would make sense.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, because you're right. That time frame doesn't put us in East Tennessee. Either way, buddy, here's what I know. Me and my wife got a private viewing of this movie.
There you go.
How about that? And that's what I'm sticking with.
Yeah, not wrong with that. Yeah, because, I mean, dude, I legitimately had never heard of this movie until you said something about it the other day.
I'm glad to introduce it to you then. I mean, even if you at the end of the review say you hated it, I think this movie deserves to be seen. And I think it kind of does what you need a horror movie to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not look out of. Again, this is like being a black highlighter, but out of the last like four or five movies we've seen and had to review, including the one that we'll be reviewing next week on Patreon. This is by far the best one I think we've seen in a while.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I will push back a little bit and say that it felt like it was Signs adjacent.
I agree with that for sure.
But I mean, it was, man, it was really good. There are definitely some times there is a, once the thing, okay, I'm running in place right now. Once this thing gets ramped up, there is a sense of uneasiness and dread that comes across.
Yep.
There's also this like coming of age feeling to this movie.
Yep.
Almost like we're blending Signs and dang it. What's the movie where they find the dead body with the kids? The Stephen King thing.
Oh, Stand By Me.
Yeah. It feels like we're blending those two movies in this thing.
I am with you in that this is very much a mashup of other movies. This association I'm about to make for you is probably one that's not going to serve your interest in the movie, but I think it's true.
Okay.
This is a cinematic Paranormal Activity with aliens.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And it's like, so again, I don't dislike the first Paranormal Activity. In fact, I'm a fan. But, you know, if you have a criticism for that movie, Dark Skies kind of gives you everything that Paranormal Activity gave you, just packaged mm-hmm. in cinematic format rather than found footage. And it really pulls it off, I think. So, like, you see it the most clear when she comes into the kitchen and everything is stacked up on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
which this movie also clearly is playing off of Poltergeist with the suburban horror stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not like that's unique to Paranormal Activity, but like going big in that way is what I think Dark Skies, Scott Stewart looked at Paranormal Activity and said, oh, I could do that. It doesn't have to be found footage. And I'll just swap out a demon you can't see for aliens that act like demons and you can see them.
Yeah.
And you're right. Pulling off Signs, Poltergeist, like he's drawn off on all these films and he ends up with a really good movie. And I think it's basically the pinnacle of his career. Like he did Legion, which was forgettable. He's involved in a TV show that basically looks like Legion as a TV show. When you look at his IMDb, you're like, oh, it's Dark Skies. And that's kind of it.
Yeah.
So you think the comparison is apt to Paranormal Activity?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you know this or not, but when I was trying to dive in and do a little bit of research, this thing was originally pitched as a found footage movie.
Oh, really? Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Which would have just, I would have shut the thing off at that point.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that didn't happen.
Well, they dabble in it a little bit, right? Because he sets up like the whole home surveillance thing and the big epiphany that gets Dad on Team Alien is that he sees it on the monitor. So the cold touch of found footage even reaches into this film.
Yeah. Yeah, because the world hates me and I can't get away from that god awful crap. So it just follows me everywhere. It's like that STD demon from It Follows. It's my albatross. It's found footage.
Every so often you look up and there's just some grainy, blurry footage moving towards you. And you have to get up and run out of the room.
And then I have to make sure that somebody watches it so that they can get passed on to them.
And thus we have the podcast.
Yeah. And that's why you're all here. You're welcome.
So you mentioned this already, but I kind of want to pull it out because I think it's a strength of this film. And I know we're kind of waxing eloquent about a movie that's not The Shining, but it's better than its reviews and it's better than the attention it has gotten, which is what I think you and I kind of agree about Dark Skies. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the world building that they take the time to do in advance. Like, you get pretty quickly into something weird is happening to this family, but they don't start pulling that thread right away. So they show you that there's some weird stuff happening to the family. And then they move into this prolonged section where you basically realize the crazy stuff happening to the family is going to make worse the sort of normal problems that a suburban family deals with.
Mm.
And we talked about this with Poltergeist. It's supposed to be sort of a critique of the suburban illusion of safety out in the suburbs. But man, I mean, I guess even coming back to this and watching it as a parent, there's all kinds of stuff here that I'm like, oh my gosh, that just weighs heavier. So like Poltergeist, dad's in financial trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you see that he feels inadequate because he's not employed. His wife is frustrated with him. He feels a burden to lie. That exacerbates existing problems. Money's tight. And so now, like, they're having this additional conflict where, you know, she thinks the kid needs therapy, but he's like, we can't afford it. And she hits him with that line that's really powerful. She's like, he's not a car payment. You know what I mean? And I'm like, dude, it's not a movie in and of itself, but like, they have actually made me feel like I'm living with this family that's doing the best they can to keep things above water, but really struggling. And now this whole other layer is dumped on top of them. The stuff where, like, they're in the park and the neighbor's like, so you want to put your kid in therapy? Like, I felt that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a really good it is a really good movie to not only show you the sci-fi horror, but also one of the things that we talk about a lot on this thing is the real life horror that goes on, you know, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, especially nowadays, everyone has veneers that they put up to make sure that everyone thinks that everything's fine and everyone's happy. But, you know, these are, especially now, especially in 2020, man, like, these are legit fears that people have. And there's, I feel like that we've normalized therapy somewhat. There's still a stigma, but I feel like that as the years have gone by, we've normalized therapy. But, you know, there was a time I remember where, you didn't want to let your neighbors know, like, something, anything like that was going on in your household.
Yeah, that's sort of the suburbia image, right? Like, we have the nice 1.5 acre lot and our family's doing well, our kids are thriving. And
yeah, look at my Stepford wife.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And even you're right, thankfully, that getting therapy and help is more normalized. But I think we still live in a world where, like, if the neighbor says it the way that the guy says it in this movie, there's an edge to it, right? Like,
yeah,
your friend can say, hey, have you thought about getting therapy? And you see that as like, oh, that's my friend encouraging me to do something good. You say it a different way, and I don't know, there's like this element of something shaming or.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are going to therapy?
Or your kid needs therapy. Because that's the thing. I think people are closer to being like, I'm screwed up. I need some problems. Or excuse me, I've got some problems. I need some help. But man, we hate that our kids might be subjected to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
The other element that they get so well in this movie that's sort of suburban horror is when the little kid has been manhandled by the aliens and he goes to that pool party.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember, like, I didn't even remember that scene watching it with my wife back in the day. And I watch it now and I'm like, oh, your life would be over.
Mm-hmm.
I've got young kids. My boys are rough and tumble. We've had two scenarios, one where my son's gotten a fight and one of them blacked the other guy's eye, right? So it's stuff guys do, it's stuff boys do. And we had another one where my daughter was kind of coming across a playground, not paying attention to what she's doing, and walked in front of a kid who was on the swing, and he clocked her on the side of the head, and it, like, knocked her down, and she was ultimately okay. There was a lot of tears, but it knocked her down, and she had a bruise down the side of her face. And with both of those, I'm thinking, like, when we go to the grocery store, people are going to think I hit my kid. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, dude, for sure.
And so, I mean, there's layers to this movie, and there's even layers to, like, my engagement with the movie based on what phase of life I'm in watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like you said, that's all before it really ramps up.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my stomach dropping when he goes to raise his shirt and seeing those marks on his stomach, mm-hmm. and just being like, oh, Lord, they're going to think, everyone's going to think the worst. And you feel terrible, especially for Carrie Russell's character. I had some difficult times at first connecting with the dad.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like that they made him out to be a jerk in the beginning.
Yeah, and our mutual friend Jared Moore pointed this out to me. They indict him as kind of a checkout. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, he's just coasting through life, and they're like, hey, buddy, your family is really suffering from your lack of engagement. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and that's spot on. That's a really good point. So your heart drops for Carrie Russell's character because she really is the glue that is trying to keep this family together. I couldn't imagine. And, you know, and this movie was 7 years ago. I can't imagine what would happen now when everything is quantified as much as it is. People would be taking pictures of that with their camera phones. And I mean, that thing, it'd be all over everywhere.
Yeah. And, you know, Carrie Russell's character has that line. She's like, my best friend thinks I abuse her child.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, some states have mandatory reporting laws, which I'm thankful for. But, like, you can't really be upset even with the best friend, because what should she do when she sees a child all bruised up in the part of their body that would normally be covered by clothing? Like, that, she's not wrong to be freaked out by that and think somebody needs to take a look. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I don't think Scott Stewart's that great of a director. I don't think he's that great of a writer, but he got a bunch of stuff right about, I don't want to say suburban midlife, but just how quickly the veneer of a perfect life in the suburbs can go really sideways hard.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it depends on aliens and all that stuff. So, of course, these circumstances in real life couldn't play out this way. But it's still, nonetheless, if you're willing to concede the element of aliens, you're like, oh, no, this is exactly how this could play out. The other element that I think this movie gets right from suburbia is, and this is probably going to be more controversial, so anybody out there listening, you may want to lean in or you may want to skip forward, but I appreciate that this movie kind of highlights that kids learning about their sexuality through porn, mm-hmm. isn't going to be a good thing. And between 2013, when this movie came out, and 2020, that problem, in my view, has become a full-blown crisis. And I think this movie actually gets that it's actually women who tend to suffer when people are trained, when men are trained on pornography, like that's where they get their understanding of sexuality from. I had a good mentor who told me about a young man. You know, think about all the craziness of trying to just grow to adolescence in 2020 and figure out who you are and deal with your hormones and all that stuff. My mentor was telling me about counseling. This case where this young man was talking to him about his sexuality because he thought he was heterosexual, but maybe he's homosexual. And it was basically because his girlfriend at the time had been reading 50 Shades of Grey and told him, you don't want to hit me and spank me. You must be gay. And his mentor was like, gosh, he just isn't into that kind of play. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But because they didn't really have a frame of reference outside of, well, everybody's reading this book, this must be what men and women are into, it threw the kid who, you know, he was old enough to be making certain decisions, but he was still young enough that he didn't understand the world he was living in, didn't understand himself perfectly well. And I feel like this is sort of an epidemic in society that nobody's talking about, that I get that, you know, repression is not a good thing either. But I don't think all the solutions that have been offered to what we see as repression in the past are going to play out particularly well. And I think there's a lot of evidence that it's not. It's just not being talked about a lot. And I kind of appreciate Dark Skies being like, yeah, when this is how things go, what comes out of that recipe isn't what anybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty heavy, but they do that really quickly and really effectively in a short section of this movie.
Yeah, that's a really good call.
Well, you want to talk about the aliens?
Always.
Kind of shades of Poltergeist. One thing about this movie that just bums me out and kind of increases the horror for me is that when Dad does get engaged and Dad gets serious and he starts modifying the house and he gets weapons to protect his family and whatnot, the angels just plow right through him like he's not even there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's its own kind of like, oh man, we're in real trouble.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know what the budget was on this thing. But I guess the one thing lacking for me in this, well, I don't know if it's lacking per se, but I was underwhelmed by how these aliens looked. I will say this though. I thought it was smart of them to have J. Jonah Jameson come in and talk about the three different kinds of aliens.
Yeah.
And for them to go with like the Slender Man look so that they didn't have to do as much CGI.
Sure.
You could just draw stick figures and they're like, oh, those are the aliens.
For sure.
In that situation, you're turning a negative into a positive.
Well, and don't you think that there's two points there? One, if they don't have J.K. Simmons doing that section, a lesser actor turns that into a whole bunch of goofiness that's laughable and you wouldn't take it seriously at all.
Yeah.
But because he's a really good actor and he does weightiness really well, he pulls it off. Like you come away being like, no, this is the guru and we need to pay careful attention to what he tells us. And I just think a lesser actor would have botched that entirely and basically ruined the movie.
Yeah.
Because coming away from JK, you're like, oh, no, this is serious. It explains why Dad gets engaged. But if he's a big goofball talking about lizard people, you're checked out at that point. You're like, OK, you lost me.
Yeah. If you've got some inferior actor trying to chew the scenery with that, it could go campy real quick. And I mean, that just changes the whole tenor of the whole movie.
And this also reminds me, 2013 is fairly long ago now, but why was there ever a time in Hollywood that J.K. Simmons wasn't in high demand?
Oh, dude, I wish I knew.
I was just looking back through his IMDb. He had done Juno by then. Mm-hmm. He was really good in Juno. It was a small part. But there's this huge gap where you're like, why was he not working in high profile projects?
Yeah, I hope that it was a personal choice. Like maybe he had a child. In school or something, and he wanted to try to take a step back. Or maybe those farmers insurance commercials were just making him bank and he didn't have to work as much.
How long have those been running? I'd like to know that.
I'm not for sure. This is a year before Whiplash comes out and gives him his Oscar.
Yeah, and Whiplash, it turns into a tour divorce. You know what I mean? Like, he starts getting the kind of acclaim he deserves at that point.
Yeah.
Which is only a year out. Like, it's so weird to think Whiplash 2014, and what was he doing the year before? He was sitting in a musty apartment set with, yellowed paper clippings nailed to a wall behind him talking about lizard people injecting stuff into human bodies. It's just such a weird trip into history.
Yeah. Yeah, which Whiplash itself is a horror movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's overused, but the idea that it's riveting, like when that kid gets to Juilliard or whatever the school is, I mean, you're just on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Oh, man, I couldn't take my eyes off of it.
That's one of those rare movies where, like, you don't hear about it, and then you hear about it a ton, and all the critics think it's a darling, and you're like, okay. But then you watch, and you're like, nope, never mind. They were right.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Did you know that? I mean, we're going off on a trail here, but that's what we do with this thing. Did you know that Whiplash was originally a short film and they turned it into a long form?
Well, they did a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is sort of a small premise, but that it stretched out well.
Yeah. I'm going to try to track that down.
On your point about the aliens, I think you're right about the CGI. That's a weakness here. Now, there's two major weaknesses in this film to me. One is the omnipotent generic search engine. Mm-hmm. Carrie sits down, she's like, aliens, kid, and it just spits out a ton of stuff, like specifically about her circumstances.
Yeah, it almost should have just said her kid's name.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you went and hired a professional researcher, but it's just this generic search engine.
Yeah.
And then
did you mean Sam? Oh my gosh, I did mean Sam.
How did you know? Than the aliens. But this movie does, it makes a wise choice. Maybe by the end, they're just forced into it. They have a light hand with the aliens as long as they can. You know what I mean? Like, she comes in the room and sees the one, and then it's gone. And you see the effects of the aliens rather than the aliens themselves. some of it playing off the suburban stuff too. Like when the kid just leaves the house and is heading out to the street, every parent's immediately going to be like, oh my gosh, what a nightmare. Because every parent's worried about that anyway. And then the dad out in the backyard, we talked about this with Paranormal Activity, but when your significant other is acting oddly in the middle of the night because they're sleepwalking or they had a bad dream and wake up screaming, it is particularly terrifying to you. You know what I mean? Like it's the oddity of the circumstances are ramped up. And so like if I found my wife in the backyard staring at the sky with her mouth locked open and then she starts a massive nosebleed, I mean, that would be a huge adrenaline dump and I would be freaked right out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a wise choice.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. I don't think I'd be able to sleep for the next 3 days.
No, for sure. I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast, but she won't mind. My wife will every now and then have a nightmare that she wakes up from, but doesn't realize she's awake yet. And it's not often, it's not uncommon that she screams, right? Like she's terrified. She screams about what she's scared about. And until I turn the lights on, she doesn't reorient to like, oh, I'm awake and that was a nightmare. And dude, you just lay there for a couple hours afterwards because, I mean, your body responds in the same way it would if somebody had broken into the house and was attacking her. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And so I really felt sympathy for Carrie Russell's character. And like we've had these phases where it would happen, let's say, like 2 times in 3 months or 4 months, right? But dude, you just, every night you go to bed and after that second time, you're like, is that going to happen again tonight? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't sleep well. Every time she rolls over, I'm like, oh my gosh, brace yourself. So
yeah,
I get that. I mean, that worked. It was realistic. It brought me into the world and said, oh yeah, this could be possible. Was there anything you found, you know, particularly scary? Like, did you think the jump scares worked or anything like that?
I don't think anything off the top of my head related to like a particular scare. I just felt that uneasiness through the entire movie. You know, I remember it is scary, but it's not, you know, what we normally qualify as scary here on the podcast. But I remember when Homeboy got the job and they're, you know, he's sitting there talking to the guy and they're, you know, they're hashing over the details a little bit about it. I just kept thinking like, oh no, something bad's about to, like, he's about to go into a trance. Cause you know, they had just set it up with Carrie Russell's character where she was showing the house to this couple, goes into the trance and then starts beating her head against that glass window.
Yeah. And that actually freaked me out a little, like that it's just abnormal behavior. And I felt like the couple there who were checking the house out.
Yeah. And so they've set you up to feel like, okay, this is the shoe's about to drop and this is what's about to happen. And I just remember being like, dude, just get out of there. Just get out. keep your job, bro. Your family needs you. Just get out. And I just had a, you know, one of those probably comical overdone, like when they finally shook hands and he left. Because there really isn't a lot of good news in this movie. And so you want to hang on to that like one glimmer of hope that this family gets in the midst of this chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so afraid that something, you know, he was going to drop his jaw again and be like, and the guy was going to be like, you know what, Dan, don't worry about it, bud. We're going to go in a different direction. You know, when your brain's not broke anymore, come back and see us.
And we'll pretend like we're interested because that's what's required by federal law.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely not trying to get rid of you for any, you know, any unethical reasons here. So have a great day.
It's funny. The thing that I was worried about is that basically someone would come in and be like, hey, we found some problems in the background search. Because by that point, you know, what was it called? CPC, the Child Protective Services, they would have been involved at that point. And that's what I thought was coming.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that would be a devastating scene. He comes home, they celebrate, you know, they have the big party. He gets a call the next day and it's like, apparently something showed up in my background check. You know what I mean? Like, that would almost be too bleak.
Yeah.
Did you see the mini twist coming?
With the older boy instead of the younger boy? Yeah, I did.
What were your tip-offs?
You know, honestly, I don't remember. I tell you what, at the beginning of the movie, when he's like, I'm not going to let anything ever happen to you, Sam. I just remember being like, as the story unfolded, I'm like, oh, they're not going after Sam. They're going after Homeboy. Like, he's going to be the one that they take.
Well, so I was caught by it the first time I watched this back in the day. I have watched this now twice in 30 days. And being reminded of the twist set me up this most recent time to like look for clues. And it's at that exact same point you're talking about in the film where I think the older brother says something to the effect of, if the Sandman came for you, he would come for me first anyway.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, Scott, you did a good job of foreshadowing there. And I was too obtuse to what, you know, to pick up on it on two watches.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the, it felt, I don't want to say heavy handed, but it just felt like that was ominous of, oh, that's going to come back later.
Yeah.
That's, you know, yeah. We might as well just fire that gun right now.
Sure. Well, I will tell you, maybe something that is of personal interest and our listeners may connect with it. I told you that Dark Skies kind of made me be like, okay, aliens are interesting and maybe I should look into that more. So when that news report came out, I talked about earlier where Rubio was like, we may have alien technology. And the New York Times is talking about UFOs in the skies as if it's a real thing. That was right in the middle of the height of the quarantine. And like, I'm at home a ton. I help my kids with school, but I'm also just sitting around a lot looking for stuff to read. So I kind of did a deep dive on the UFO situation in 2020. And so the things that I found that are most interesting is that the lead singer for Blink-182, Tom DeLonge, has created this thing called To the Stars Academy. And he's basically, as crazy as this sounds, he's facilitating the military releasing the UFO information they have to the public.
Oh, okay.
So like Tom DeLonge is the conduit through which like those videos were released that the New York Times was reporting on. Which is not what you would expect as a Blink-182 fan.
Yeah, man. Say it ain't so. I will not go.
Well, there's a new documentary out that came out just, I think, last month called The Phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And it basically is a deep dive on this stuff. And Tom DeLonge features in it. And it's kind of saying like, oh, no, the military knows there's UFO stuff going on. They've got a ton of material on it. In fact, Harry Reid, who was the Senate majority leader up until Republicans took the Senate. So, like, we're talking about top-level Democrat leadership. He's in The Phenomenon a ton talking about the stuff he's seen because while he was in office, he launched basically a panel to, like, investigate what does the government have. And so now he's out of office and he's talking about it. And, you know, for people who are still kind of like UFOs or this pie-in-the-sky conspiracy theory crazy thing, like the Randy Quaid thing you're talking about, it's really jarring to see, like, not just the New York Times and Marco Rubio, but Harry Reid talking about it seriously, you know? Mm-hmm. So if listeners are into that, if this movie has whet their appetite, I think The Phenomenon is still like $20 to buy. But if you've got some buddies who are willing to brave COVID with you, I think it's well worth watching. I don't know if any of it's real, legit or anything like that. I just think it's worth watching.
Huh.
And there's another one called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. Same documentary company, super high quality documentaries. This is a guy named Stephen Greer. Who's like a big name in UFO circles for good or for ill. And he's convinced that aliens are extra dimensional beings and that they like pop into our reality and pop out of reality. And he thinks that you can like call them in and you can commune with them. And that in fact, we should be doing that as like ambassadors for Earth. And his documentary's got all kinds of claims. Like he claims that this one guy had his hearing loss restored by an alien that they asked to do so. And at one point, he says, like, these entities have advanced to a level of consciousness that would be comparable to an angel or something. And I want to be like, Stephen, what would that or something be? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And particularly if you think this is less extra, you know, extraterrestrial as it is extra dimensional. Like if there are immaterial beings who can hop through planes of existence through consciousness, are there any other popular theories about what those things could be? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if anybody gets the bug for this, The Phenomenon and Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind are super fascinating. By no means am I endorsing any of the content, but like, you know, if you like a documentary that's going to make you like it's going to unhinge your jaw, both of those do that. And Stephen Greer will sell you an app For $10 that will tell you how to like call aliens in. I just recommend you not do that. I explicitly recommend you not call extra dimensional beings in and give Stephen Greer $10 to do it with.
Too late. I've already downloaded it and charged it to my account.
All right. Well, when the intelligence of Xylon 17 from Umar takes over your consciousness, I'll just see if he's interested in doing the podcast.
That'll be great. Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. At first, when you were talking about the lead singer Bleak 182, it sounded like you were talking about he was trying to make a new Heaven's Gate cult.
I mean, that's not off the table.
Yeah.
I don't really know what all he's into with To the Stars Academy, but I can tell you this. If you have an appetite for Joe Rogan podcasts, go listen to the Joe Rogan podcast with Tom DeLonge. And again, it will be eye-widening.
Well, there you go. I'll probably pass on that. But
well, the last good thing I have to say about this movie, getting off the UFO stuff, is just that Josh Hamilton's a really good actor, mm-hmm. and I wish he had more stuff to do.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Josh Hamilton is kind of one of those names, again, where you're like, why isn't this dude doing more stuff?
Uh-huh. I think he could do like a third-tier Paul Rudd thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know why he hasn't. I loved him in eighth grade. Did you see that?
Yes. The Bo Burnham movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I loved him. And I loved Elsie Fisher in that. I thought that movie was awesome.
Yeah.
And I just look at that. And I'm like, well, why did nobody grab him to do more stuff?
Yeah. I guess he was in 13 Reasons Why, that Netflix show.
Mm-hmm.
They got a bunch of press and hype over the last few years. I guess he was a part of that too.
Okay. That might be what he's doing.
Yeah. I think he was the dad to the main character in that.
Okay. Well, more power to him on that. He should be working.
Yeah, for sure.
He should definitely be working. And he apparently does well with, you know, young adults. So 13 Reasons Why, eighth grade, this movie, like there's a theme there.
It was a nice palate cleanser from all of the ridiculous gaga we had to watch lately.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. It doesn't reinvent the wheel, but it just handles its business and delivers what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that sometimes we overrate reinventing the wheel, or we overhype it, you know? Sometimes it's just nice to have, I don't want to say formulaic, but it's nice to have familiar ideas or familiar stories that we can go back to and be like, oh, yeah, I like this. And I'll be honest with you, man, it took me a little bit to get into this movie. But once I got into it, I was in and was really happy that you suggested it and put it on my radar. I don't think I'll watch it again in the next 30 days, but I'll definitely, the next time I have like a signs itch, I'll want to watch this now instead of that, just because of my hatred for M. Night Shyamalan. So I appreciate you giving me an alternative, so I don't, you know, so I don't support that fiend anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're welcome on that front. I will say that we talk about this from time to time on the podcast, the movie that you can recommend to a friend and say, it's good, it'll scare you. You know, the next time you're in the mood for something scary, it's a dark and stormy night and you want to watch something scary, just grab this one.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, that's its own kind of commendation. Its own kind of commendation.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the one to do that with, for sure. Yeah. And I also think that this is a great movie for people who aren't like horror aficionados,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess you were pretty much saying the exact same thing, but like, hey, I'm trying to get into horror movies. What should I watch? I'm not big on scares, but you know, is there something you would recommend? And I'd go, yeah, try Dark Skies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you know, let's sample this wine. And if you like that one, then we'll go to something else.
For sure. I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that your significant other who might not be into horror would probably be able to watch with you and not feel miserable about.
Yeah. We both love food, so we can say it this way. It's not the main course. It's not your entree, but it's a great starter.
That's a really great analogy. I think I may modify it just a little bit in this way. This movie's not a steak or lobster,
mm-hmm.
but it's like a really good hamburger.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're really happy to have a good hamburger.
Yeah. Yep. This movie is the mozzarella sticks of movies.
Perfect. Now I want mozzarella sticks.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you notice that I'm on a diet? like I'm cutting calories right now because I'm just trying to every good food I can't eat.
Well, I'm not on a diet and I live in the deep South. And so if I blindfold myself and spin around 9 times, wherever I'm facing, there's a Sonic in that direction.
Dude, whatever. There's some there's some churches that'll do communion with cheese sticks.
As a guy who actually administers communion, I'm slightly bothered by that, but it's a really funny statement.
There's not many people I would say that to, but I knew that you'd find the humor in it instead of being offended. So
yeah, that's very funny. Particularly as a guy who lives in the deep South, we're like, can it be fried? It should be fried.
That's what I was just thinking. This is my body fried for you. Eat in remembrance of me.
Just last night, talking to a friend, they're frying their turkey for Thanksgiving.
Come on, man.
And everybody talks about it like it's a divine revelation. And you know what? I hate turkey. It probably is the best version of turkey because frying stuff, as gross as it is, makes everything taste good.
I'm going to push back on that. I may have to revoke my Southern card, but I'm just not a big fried person.
Do you think that's a product of taste, or is that cultivated because you know it's basically toxic for your body?
I think half and half. I mean, I'll still, you know, I'll still have some mozzarella sticks and stuff every once in a while, but I've just never been a big fried person. Like, I'm not a big fried chicken person.
See, I am. I can't do it too often, but I love some fried chicken.
Yeah, it's I don't know, man. It's just one of those things. I think this is a deep dive into my psyche, but I think that I tried for so long to reject all things Southern that I finally did it.
Oh, well, I'm glad I'm not part of that category then.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, you know, I don't know. I just, again, going into my psyche, I think from a young age, I just thought that like things from the South were very rednecky, mm-hmm. if that's a word. And I just didn't want to associate myself with rednecky. Now I don't care. You know, now I'm like, yeah, whatever. But I think as a kid, I don't know. We're getting way too personal on this thing. Anyway, I say all that to say I'm not a fried fan for health reasons, but also for taste reasons as well.
Yeah, I even get what you're talking about there. Like I don't hate being from the South or a Southern guy, but I wonder if people who live in different regions feel that same sense of like, maybe I should be ashamed of this the way that Southerners tend to.
Yeah.
Like there's the, it's crude, but there's the stereotype of the masshole, right? Like the quasi-Irish guy from generally the Boston area who likes to fight all the time.
Yeah.
Like, did those guys in Southie grow up being like, maybe you should be ashamed of being from Southie? I really don't know. That'd be a curiosity for me.
I think there is. I think that there is a certain certain shame sect in every category in the U.S., you know? They're like, hey, I'm from here, but I'm not from here. You know what I mean?
I'm from here, but I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the thing.
All right, man. Well, we'll put a bow on it before we start doing any more psychological evaluations of our regional upbringing.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of therapy, this has been a really good session. So let's ask the questions, man. Did we see something scary?
I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to be specific. So when she walks into the bedroom and sees the thing hanging over the bed, that worked as a jump scare for me. It wasn't the greatest ever, but it worked. Hubby out in the road, in the backyard, bleeding out the nose. That worked okay. And then the suburban horror stuff, that all worked for me. So yes, without qualification, yes.
I agree. I don't necessarily think that I would go with the jump scare so much, but the other stuff for sure got me. And like I said, I this isn't the scariest movie I've ever seen, but again, when you think about like just the tension and being on edge, you know, for probably the last 45 minutes of this movie, I definitely would say that we saw something scary and would want to recommend it to people. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put this?
This movie is a 6.5 for me.
Yeah, I agree. Same thing for me.
And it's just slightly above perfectly acceptable horror.
Yeah. I want to say that this is slightly above perfectly acceptable horror, but also like an undiscovered gem mm-hmm. of a movie. Just because I went into it not knowing anything about it and walked out of it really not only enjoying it, but being happy that I invested my time in it.
I'm really glad to hear that as somebody who really likes this movie. I think this is the time for this movie to be rediscovered, actually, because as we've talked about, the pipeline isn't cut off, but it's restricted, right? New content coming in is just, there's just less of it than we're used to. And I think this is a great time to go back and catch Dark Skies, either to see it for the first time or the first time in a long time.
Yeah, for sure, man. I completely agree. This is definitely a time to check this one out. And if you haven't, I suggest you do that. Or if you haven't in a long time, I suggest maybe this is your weekend plans.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely worth throwing on the next time you want to watch a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I can't say for the other things that we've watched this month.
Dude, I will save it for Patreon, but I finished all the Hell House sequels.
Oh, my goodness.
Speaking of therapy, I have a problem.
Yeah. I just want to hug you. Yeah, I definitely want to hear about that. You know, I don't want to say that this month has been bad. I thought that the Never Hike Alone stuff was really good. Mm-hmm. I forget the other stuff that we watched besides that, but the Never Hike Alone stuff was really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that as well.
But it feels like everything else has been really difficult to watch.
Pretty rough. We've had some rough spots. I didn't hate Hell House the way you did, but it's been pretty rough.
Yeah. Oh, Marnie was the other thing we had to watch. Oh, man.
That was unfortunate.
Yeah, this month's been a kick to the Jimmy. So definitely go watch this movie. It's well worth it. And if you want to know what we're talking about with this Hell House stuff, you got to go get on the Patreon. Patreon.com/scarypodcast. For as little as $3 a month, you get a bonus episode every month. We felt bad about how horrible the one in October was. Not necessarily the episode itself, but just how bad the movie was. So we took to a poll to see what our patrons would like for us to watch. And, it's been crazy. So we reviewed Hell House LLC. That was the first episode. And next week we will drop Crow's Nest. And I'm telling you, I'm not trying to shill here. I guess I am. But if you enjoy me ripping apart a movie, buckle up, because I'm going to go in guns blazing. I may rewatch it this week just to get mad all over again.
The concept of the hate watch.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty rough. And you can find out all about it. Scary Podcast. Patreon.com/scarypodcast. Join the Facebook group. We saw something scary. And leave us those 5-star reviews on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever they're calling themselves nowadays. We would greatly appreciate it. Don't know what we're doing next week. Next week's going to be crazy, of course, with Thanksgiving. But we will definitely be dropping that Patreon episode probably the first of next week. So buckle up for that. Jeff, anything else?
Nah, man, I'm good. Thanks, listeners, for supporting independent podcasts.
Yep, we definitely appreciate you guys so much. And we will see you guys back here next week. But until then, beware of blind men with turkey basters, clowns in sewers, and white people with teacups. See you next week. Bye-bye, man.